listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another edition of The Corbett Report. I'm your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in July of 2024 with episode 462 of The Corbett Report podcast, The Corbett Report Hall of Shame. All right, guys, I have, I hope, fun and educational activity today that I hope you will get something out of. And specifically, as you might have guessed from the title, I'm going to construct a Corbett Report Hall of Shame of clips that I think definitely deserve such a dishonor, as well as counterbalancing that with a Hall of Fame of clips that demonstrate people who have spoken truth in wild, zany, unexpected, exciting ways over the years. So let's try. Let's dig in and see if this works. And if it does, I'm sure there would be opportunities for many, many such inductions in the future to the Corbett Report Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame. Now, a couple of provisos, one of which is that you all know the clips from the past year or two of various liars telling their lies on mainstream media, or even people speaking bold truths online or otherwise. Great, awesome. But today, I've been doing this work for 17 years, so I've amassed quite a collection of clips from the past half century, really, of material out there that you may not know about. If you're a regular Corbett Report viewer and have been since the beginning, maybe you know some of these clips, but maybe you don't, or maybe you need refreshing, or maybe you need a link to them. Well, anyway, you're going to get it today. So, as I say, this should be fun, but it should also be educational. Let's give it a try. So, enough blabbing, let's get straight into it. I'm going to induct the first Corbett Report Hall of Shame recipient into the dishonored halls of the Corbett Report Hall of Shame, namely Dan Rather, a plucky young upstart journalist who was there in Dallas, Texas in November of 1963 to witness the events of the assassination and then subsequent cover-up of John F. Kennedy. And yes, wouldn't you know it, it was this plucky young upstart journalist who was one of the first people in the world to see the Zapruder film before it got covered up and not shown to the public for another decade plus. It was Dan Rather that was the one who got the scoop and got to see the film even before the CIA began its alteration of that film. And he delivered the live report of what he had just witnessed to credulous television viewers there on November 25th, 1963. And you may remember part of this clip from the 9/11 conspiracy theory video, but here he is in his own words telling us the bold truth about what he saw on the Zapruder film.
In the next instant, with this time Mrs. Kennedy apparently looking on, a second shot, the third total shot, hit the president's head. His head could be seen to move violently forward. The car never stopped, it never paused. In the front seat, a Secret Service man was on the telephone. The car picked up speed and disappeared beneath an underpass.
There you go, friends, the hard-hitting truth from a hard-hitting journalist reporting the facts live there to credulous television viewing audiences in November of 1963, and you can imagine them sitting there glued to their television screen watching this chaos unfold on the glowing magical screen that is telling them what happened. And there is a trusted news reporter telling you what he just saw with his own eyes. Incredible. All right, if you want the full clip, the full 3+ minute clip is there and will be linked in the show notes, so you can go watch it in its context. And I suggest you do, because I counted 5 baseless suppositions, as well as those 2 demonstrable lies, in that 3-minute spiel, which is a pretty good record. I hope this Dan Rather character, I hope he has a rich and fruitful career after this. I'm wondering if he'll be well rewarded for his lies. Anyway, but he was just describing something that he had just seen. He might not remember correctly. He might have done that forward motion, actually doing the motion to show you what happened. He might have just been misremembering what he literally just saw. He said he did the fastest 100-yard dash in the world from the room where the Zapruder's attorney had allowed him to see the film to the television studio audience so he could breathlessly relate what he had just seen. Anyway, there is a much bigger story to the Zapruder film, and hopefully you know something about it. But if not, you don't want to turn to Dan Rather. You want to turn to someone like Jacob Hornberger, who I hope the more switched on viewers in the audience will know, has written a book about this and talked about it at great length. If you want a taste of that, you can go to this article from the Future of Freedom Foundation from 2022 on the CIA's Zapruder film secrecy, which goes into great detail about what Hornberger learned in his investigation and his book, An Encounter with Evil, the Abraham Zapruder story. But long story short, the official story is that after having watched the film and then gone and lied about it to television audiences, Dan Rather went back with the carte blanche from CBS network executive heads to pay whatever Zapruder is asking, pay for it so we can get this film. But wouldn't you know it, shucks, Time Life had swooped in there and purchased it up. So it was already sold and already sent off to Time's Life Magazine's Photographic Center, wherever that happened to be. That's what happened to the Zapruder film, right? Actually, wrong. And that's what Hornberger's work showed. So the day after the assassination, Zapruder sold the print rights to his film to Life Magazine. On that day, the film was flown to Chicago, where Life's printing operations were located. Well, for decades, that remained the official story. But in the late 2000s, more than 40 years after the assassination, it came out that the film was actually diverted to the National Photographic Interpretation Center, the NPIC, in Washington, D.C., which was operated by the CIA. By this time, of course, the mainstream media had bought into the official lone nut theory of the assassination and was loath to explain any new developments in the case. This all came out from this CIA official named Dino Brugioni, who worked at NPIC. He's recognized as a photographic interpretation expert. He has a Wikipedia page, so you know he's legit. But in the late 2000s, he told the story of what really happened to the film. So on November 23rd, 1963, the evening of the Saturday, so the evening of the next night, so this was shortly after Rather had seen the film and attempted and failed to buy it, two Secret Service agents brought the Zapruder film to Brugioni at the NPIC. And this meant, of course, that the official narrative that had been promoted for more than 40 years has been false the entire time. The film wasn't sent to Life's printing plant. After being taken from Dallas to Chicago, it was diverted to Washington. Brugioni's team was charged with marking enlargements of selected frames from the film and then posting them on briefing boards. As they were doing that through the wee hours of Sunday morning, the two Secret Service agents left with the film. The film was taken to a super secret CIA operation called Hawkeye Works that was located in Kodak's headquarters in Rochester, New York. And as Hornberger details in his book, the only reason they would have taken the film to there was to produce a super high-quality altered copy of it. As Brugioni related to Horn and Janney, they could do anything at Hawkeye Works. That altered copy was then shipped on Sunday, November 24th, from Rochester back to NPIC in Washington. On Sunday night, a brand new team was summoned to NPIC to do the same thing the Saturday night team had done, make enlargements of frames from the film and post them on briefing boards. The difference, however, was a big one. The Sunday night team was using the altered copy to conduct its operation. It's that altered copy that became the new Zapruder original that people are familiar with today. And he goes into that. And if you're really interested, by all means, deep dive into his book where he has all of this laid out. But yeah, that's the real story of the Zapruder film. So actually, Dan Rather is one of the very, very, very few people on the planet who has seen the actual original unaltered Zapruder film. But he lied about it. So I guess we'll never know what was really on that film unless and until it emerges from the skunkworks of Hawkeye Works. Holding my breath on that one. Anyway, so for that reason, I think Dan Rather definitely deserves to be the first official inductee of the Corbett Report Hall of Shame. But let's move on. Let's refresh our palate. Instead of Hall of Shame, Hall of Shame, Hall of Shame, Hall of Shame, let's alter things up. Hall of Shame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame, Hall of Fame. So the next inductee will be an inductee into the Corbett Report Hall of Fame for a clip that presents an interesting and surprising truth in a way that, well, was exciting at the time, and continues to thrill even today. For those of you who haven't seen it yet, well, back in the 1990s, when Gary Webb was breaking the story of CIA involvement in drug running in the 1980s, and their involvement in the crack epidemic and all of that, well, there were some hearings that were held. There was a bunch of reports and internal investigations. You've seen Skull and Bones presidential nominee selection candidate John Kerry, who was one of the heads of one of those investigations in the Senate, talking about, yes, the CIA was complicit in drug running, all of those interesting clips that have been memory-holed. But you will also remember that at that time, in 1996, the then-director of the CIA, John Deutsch, was invited to a town hall meeting in Los Angeles to talk about this problem, the allegations that were emerging, and did the CIA deal drugs? Well, into that meeting stepped a surprising witness with some interesting testimony that was allowed to speak at the microphone. I'm referring to none other than Michael Rupert, the next inductee into the Corbett Report Hall of Fame.
I am a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, and I work South Central Los Angeles, and I will tell you, Director Deutsch, emphatically and without equivocation...
Can you speak further into the mic, sir? These mics don't seem to be...
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Fascinating, isn't it? Isn't it interesting that we've been so habituated to expecting to hear lies, political, diplomatic lies, coming from all sources of supposed presumed authority, that when we hear someone in a position to know speak clearly and plainly the simple truth in a powerful and authoritative way, especially when that truth is spoken directly to power, like in this case, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, isn't it interesting how thrilling that can be? So I get why people in that room were freaking out, and I think that this is a Hall of Fame-worthy clip, if only because it broaches the larger topic of the CIA and the drug trade. So if you want more on that story, I have quite a bit in the archives, including a podcast episode and several videos, perhaps most notably a 2011 report I filed on the CIA and the drug trade. But one of the reports that I've mentioned a few times now in my reporting on that CIA complicity in the drug trade was a 1997 Dateline NBC report called A Crack in the Story that was talking about Gary Webb's reporting there in the mid-1990s exposing CIA complicity in the drug trade and the crack epidemic of the 1980s, etc. Of course, that reporting has long since been vindicated, but it was dragged through the mud, something I've talked about before, for example, on New World Next Week. Tragic what happened to Gary Webb, and if you want more on that, Requiem for the Suicided on Gary Webb. We'll have plenty more information on it. But as I say, one of the reports that I've mentioned in my reporting on this over the years is a Dateline NBC report from 1997, and it is the source of our next Hall of Shame clip, although it also contains that aforementioned clip of Skull and Bonesman John Kerry admitting that
there's no question in my mind there is a complicity in the flow of drugs into this country.
Which, I think, could be a potential Hall of Fame-worthy clip, but let's not induct Skull and Bonesman John Kerry into the Corbett Report Hall of Fame. Hey guys, no, I don't think I'll do that. But an interesting admission, of course, part of a larger limited hangout, the Senate investigation that Kerry was running. Yeah, some people knew, but you know, they didn't really know and blah, blah, blah. The usual whitewash that you would expect. But no, it is from that same Dateline NBC report that we get a different clip that will be the next Hall of Shame induction recipient. And that is Dwayne Ramsdale Dewey Claridge, who is a 30-year veteran of the CIA, specifically a CIA operations officer, who had his own things to say about Gary Webb's reporting of CIA drug-running complicity.
This is nonsense.
Now retired, Dewey Claridge was the CIA's man in charge of Central America in the early 80s. Yes. He insists the agency had nothing to do with any drug trafficking or with any cover-up.
Don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. Come on. I mean, come on. Listen, there has never been a conspiracy in this country.
If you ever heard me say in my crotchety old man impersonation voice, there has never been a conspiracy in this country. Well, now you know where that comes from. And if the Corbett Report is responsible for literally nothing else other than enshrining that moment, that ridiculous moment, as the exemplar of a stupid, ridiculous lie being sold to the public, then hey, it will all have been worth it. So remember Dewey Claridge and his Hall of Shame clip there. But now that that's firmly embedded in our memory, let's cleanse our palate with another Hall of Fame inductee. And this time, we're going to turn to something completely different. You might recall the Church Committee hearings from the 1970s. Specifically, the Church Committee was set up in 1975 after a series of scandals regarding the CIA and the FBI, the intelligence agencies in the United States, and their nefarious underground activities. And hey, are they going a little further than they should? Etc., etc. As that started to come to light, and there were a number of scandalous stories that were reported, there was a Church Committee that was headed up by Senator Frank Church that was tasked with delving into the nitty-gritty details of what the CIA and FBI and these other alphabet supers were doing, and whether it was all legal and above board. And although you would expect a hearing of this sort to be a whitewash, and certainly certain things were covered up and not explored in the detail that they should have been, nevertheless, it was perhaps to this day the single biggest open hearing of intelligence-related underhand duplicity and schemes. And there's a lot of information that came out in the Church Committee hearings that we take for granted today, but that we might not know or remember where it came from. And there's a number of things to talk about there. For example, I've pointed to the various drips and drabs of information that came out about the CIA's relationship to the media in the Church Committee hearings, which was then further elaborated on by Carl Bernstein in 1977, CIA and the Media, which I've referenced a number of times. Remember the FBI, the letter that the FBI sent to Martin Luther King trying to blackmail him into committing suicide? Remember that? Well, you will if you've seen my Truth at Last documentary on the MLK assassination and the truth about it. But if you haven't seen that, yeah, look into it. An incredible little piece of information that was also part of what the Church Committee found in its year of operation. But, you know, there's a number of things I could point to. I mean, even Frank Church talking openly in public about the NSA and the National Security Agency and what it was doing and its immense power to spy on everyone and how that could be turned, it could be turned against the American people. And if there was ever a tyranny in the United States, they would know everything and they'd be able to do anything. He was warning about that even on national TV, let alone in the hearings itself. So that might be Hall of Fame worthy, but I think we will induct a moment from the Church Committee hearings into the Hall of Fame. I guess we'll have to induct Frank Church for being the one who's actually doing the questioning. But anyway, here's director of the CIA, William Colby, presenting the heart attack gun.
Have you brought with you some of those devices which would have enabled the CIA to use this poison for...
We have indeed.
For killing people? Don't point it at me. I wonder if...
Mitch, can you roll that over?
Now, does this pistol fire the dart?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chairman. The round thing at the top is obviously the sight. The rest of it is what is practically a normal 45, although it's special. However, it works by electricity. There's a battery in the handle, and it fires a small dart.
So that when it fires silently?
Almost silently, yes. Very little.
Range does it have?
It's 100 meters. 100 meters, I believe, about 100 yards, 100 meters.
about 100 meters range.
Right.
And the dart itself, when it strikes the target, does the target know that he's been hit and about to die?
That depends, Mr. Chairman, on the particular dart used. There are different kinds of these flechettes that were used in various weapon systems, and a special one was developed which potentially would be able to enter the target without perception.
Oh yeah, there's the director of the CIA just casually handing over the heart attack gun for inspection. In the testimony that William Colby was forced to give to the committee against the wishes of the Ford administration, but the church committee had the authority to call William Colby and compel him to testify, and he did. And, well, things like the heart attack gun came out and is now just casually admitted as, well, that's just mainstream history now. What was conspiracy theory yesterday is mainstream history now, and this is now one of those things that you'll find in one of those listicle articles. Top five conspiracy theories that turned out to be true. And, now it's mainstream admitted history. You can take this from any mainstream site. The disturbing story of the heart attack gun invented by the CIA during the Cold War. Talking about the heart attack gun firing a dart made out of frozen shellfish toxin that would enter the target's bloodstream and kill them in mere minutes without leaving a trace. And there's the dramatic moment from the testimony there with Church holding the gun aloft. And there's the person who was tasked with finding that shellfish toxin and isolating it, Mary Embry, and part of MK Naomi projects, and talking about the development of the gun and all of this. But don't worry, guys, at the very end, it talks about what happened to this. Whether the weapon was ever used is also unknown. The toxin may have been put to further use as a suicide pill for American operatives. Yeah, sure. Or as a powerful sedative and was set aside for one operation. But as Colby claimed, we are aware that the operation was not in fact completed. Partially due to the Church Committee's findings, in 1976, President Gerald Ford signed an executive order forbidding any employee of the government to engage in or conspire to engage in political assassination. There you go. Done and dusted. If ever there was an era of the heart attack gun, it came to a close when that order was signed, bringing to an end the CIA's most notoriously secretive and violent years. There you go, guys. That's the mainstream takeaway from this. And, oh, I guess there's one other mainstream takeaway from all of this. Congressional oversight in the crippling of the CIA. Yes, to this very day, people in the intelligence industrial complex still continue to argue that the Church Committee was responsible for things like 9/11. Because, oh my God, you have these meddling congressmen and senators and other outside people trying to look in at what the CIA is doing, and they hamstrung the organization so that it couldn't do what it needed to do to protect the country on September 11th. So there you go. That's the way that ends. Well, actually, not quite, because that was testimony from Colby in September of 1975. But as I recall, he didn't make it past the Halloween massacre of the CIA later that year, where Ford decided to replace him as executive director of the CIA with, let me check my notes. Oh, George H.W. Bush. That's right. Remember when the Church Committee got a little too talky? So Ford chopped off Colby's head and sewed on the head of George H.W. Bush. The CIA went clamped up, stopped talking, and the Church Committee had to wrap up its investigation. And, I wonder where this George H.W. Bush guy came from and why he was selected. I mean, I'm certain he was never involved with the agency before that point, at least if I consult Wikipedia. And don't ever ask questions about Operation Zapata. All right, anyway, there's obviously much more to that story, but let's move on. So the Church Committee, that particular Church Committee hearing anyway, certainly deserves to be in a Hall of Fame and to be remembered. But now we have to delve back into the other side of things for a Hall of Shame-worthy clip. And so let's turn to a clip that you may, again, remember from previous reports that I've done. And this is a clip where, at the beginning, you're going to think that the inductee should be David Rockefeller. And you're probably not wrong. He should be in the Hall of Shame. But actually, you have to wait to the punchline to find out that the next inductee to the Corbett Report Hall of Shame is not David Rockefeller, but Darth Cheney.
A special televised meeting of the New York-based Council on Foreign Relations provides a window to the real story. The speaker, Vice President Dick Cheney, takes a question from David Rockefeller.
Vice President, I just enjoyed so much your whole speech, but I was particularly pleased that you gave such a strong endorsement for the free trade agreement for all the Americas, subject that has been of great concern to me for many years, and particularly recently, and I think it's absolutely essential for the strength of our economy.
Rockefeller's role in the drive for an FTAA was a lot more central than he portrays. Rockefeller cultivated Latin American leaders who could be counted on to support such a proposal. Both the 1994 Miami Summit and the FTAA proposal were conceived and nurtured by a Rockefeller-created network. Prominent among the organizations sponsoring the Miami event were the Council of the Americas, founder and honorary chairman David Rockefeller, the Americas Society, chairman David Rockefeller, the Forum of the Americas, founder David Rockefeller, the Institute for International Economics, financial backer and board member David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission, founder and honorary chairman David Rockefeller. Rockefeller's influence also extends to the current administration. He was chairman emeritus of the CFR when Vice President Dick Cheney once served as a director, a relationship that Cheney concealed during his congressional career.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
Oh, Dick. Ha ha ha. So funny. Yay. Ha, you lied to your voters. Yay. Well, that seems pretty par for the course, but definitely deserving of a Hall of Shame. Prize? Dishonor? I don't know what to call it. At any rate, Dick Cheney deserves to be in the Hall of Shame. And I must admit, every single time I mention Dick Cheney at these days, I have to look up and double check. Has he not died yet? Really? Is he still going with his bionic heart? Like a man who literally doesn't have a pulse because of the weird whatever contraption he's using to circulate blood around his system at this point? He's still alive? Oh, if only. Come on, Grim Reaper, where are you? You know, the funny thing is, remember, do you remember when CNN accidentally published their pre-made obituary for Dick Cheney, back in 2003? The internet remembers. Anyway, if only CNN was right, even just that one time. Anyway, yay, okay. Dick Cheney is now officially in the Corbett Report Hall of Shame. All right, so let's change tracks again. Let's go back to the Hall of Fame here. Let's induct another person into that. And this time we're going to induct a journalist who managed to conduct, it wasn't really an ambush interview. I think it was fully expected, but it took an interesting turn when the interviewee subject made a stupid claim that the interviewer, who is the inductee to the Hall of Fame, named Paul Moreira, who was recording an interview for a documentary that aired on Canal Plus, and I have the name of that documentary here somewhere, Bientôt dans vos assiettes. Please do not make fun of my French pronunciation, but anyway, yes, in the course of recording this interview, the interviewee, Patrick Moore, makes a stupid claim regarding the safety of glyphosate, and the interviewer, the Hall of Fame inductee, jumps in to call him on that claim, and the result is definitely worth watching.
That glyphosate in Argentina is causing increases in cancer. You can drink a whole quart of it and it won't hurt you.
You want to drink some? We have some here.
I'd be happy to, actually. But not really, but...
Not really?
I know it wouldn't hurt me.
If you say so, I have some glyphosate.
No, I'm not stupid.
Ah, okay, so you...
No, but I know...
So it's dangerous,
I
right?
Know, no, people try to commit suicide fail regularly.
Tell the truth.
It's not dangerous to humans. No, it's not.
So are you ready to drink one glass of glyphosate?
No, I'm not an idiot.
Oh, you can see the moment at which the penny drops and Patrick Moore realizes what he said and that he's going to have to find an artful way of dodging it. It's perfectly safe to drink, but I won't because I'm not an idiot. What? Anyway, of course, as you would expect, this actually gave rise to an opportunity for the early deployment of something that has since become quite common, that I've pointed out a number of times, the old fact-checker method of debunking something. Oh my God, this is going viral. Too many people are paying attention to this. So back in 2015, the fact-checkers came along because a lot of the reports were calling Patrick Moore a Monsanto lobbyist. And so the fact-checkers got to jump in there and say, fact check, actually, no, Patrick Moore isn't a paid lobbyist. So, therefore, nothing that you've just seen is of any relevance whatsoever. Well, of course, that tired old cliched, now hackneyed trick had about as much relevance back in 2015 as it does today, but of course they had attempted to employ it. But as other people have rightfully pointed out, the fact that someone was reticent to literally drink weed killer is perhaps not the actual root of the issue. The root of the issue is that glyphosate is a carcinogen, that it does have deleterious health effects, that it is now the most used agricultural chemical in the history of humanity. It is seeping into waterways, getting into it's not only in the food supply, but the runoff and all of these knock-on problems that are coming as a result of glyphosate. Massive awards for damages to people whose cancer the courts have ruled have come from their glyphosate exposure, etc., etc. There's a lot of meat there beyond simply this gotcha moment. So absolutely, Paul Moreira, for in getting that out of Patrick Moore and playing into it perfectly in that moment, deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But more to the point, if you're concerned about glyphosate and the real story behind it, I hope you would at the very least type glyphosate into the Corporate Report search bar to find out much more that I've had to say on that in the past, and follow the links to more and more information about that very important subject. Having said that, this is how it rolls with the Corporate Report Hall of Shame and Hall of Fame. And I hope this gives an idea. We've inducted 3 Hall of Shame inductees and 3 Hall of Fame inductees today. I think that's good for today. Obviously, there are a million more examples that spring to mind off the top of my head of people who should be inducted into one of these halls or the other. I'm sure you also have your nominations for people who should be inducted. So whether or not this series continues, whether or not I will ever do a podcast like this ever again, whether there will be more inductees into the Hall of Fame or Hall of Shame, depends completely on you and your response to this podcast. If you think this is valuable, I think this was fun and interesting and educational. And if you want more information, go to corporatereport.com/hall-of-shame. And you will find the links to all of the resources, all of the things that I've talked about today, so you can actually explore this information and get more information about it. But also, hopefully, get some of these clips and share them around. I think they will be particularly effective, even for the conspiracy adverse in the crowd, because they're definitely memorable and interesting clips. I hope you agree. Anyway, I'm sure you have your own suggestions. So, Corporate Report members, please log into the website, leave your suggestions. Who do you think should be in the Hall of Fame? Who do you think should be in the Hall of Shame? What specific clip, what moment do you think should be inducted? And if there is a response, if people have some ideas, then maybe we'll do this again. If not, well, anyway, I hope that you got something out of this exploration. And as I say, corporatereport.com/hall-of-shame to either leave your nominations and or to consult the show notes. Having said that, I think that's going to do it for today. Thank you for spending your time with me in this exploration today. I'm James Corbett of corporatereport.com. Looking forward to talking to you again in the near future.